Fire season is usually winding down by this point of the year, but in this drought year, firefighters are still very busy in parts of the region. The big fire is still burning and smoking up the air are fine examples of accidental fires. It only took a spark, and then off they went, for weeks, burning up trees and brush and even homes. The concept of prescribed fire runs counter to all that, favoring smaller fires that don't burn so hot. That concept is the central idea behind the Southern Oregon Prescribed Fire Network. The network recently asked members of Congress to preserve funding for prescribed fires on federal lands. We have two guests with us. Rich Fairbanks is a longtime wildland firefighter. Rich, welcome to you.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us. And Jim Wells is with us as well, the chair of the Southern Oregon Prescribed Fire Network. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Surely.
Rich, let's start with you. Let's get to the terminology. What is prescribed fire?
Well, it's intentionally setting a fire under controlled conditions to achieve specific objectives. And in most cases nowadays, a great deal of study and instrumentation and so forth goes into planning prescribed fires.
It's not the kind of thing you just do and go, oh, you know, this looks like a good place to burn.
No, that would be more arson.
Right.
No, they're carefully planned, and of course, because they're dependent on weather, fuels, and topography for their behavior. The variable that nobody can predict is weather. So sometimes they do escape, get bigger than what they were planned to do, et cetera, but they are way, way better than wildfires. Most of the time, prescribed fires are planned specifically when unstable conditions in the atmosphere allow the smoke to go straight up and be vented away from human habitation. And we're just now getting a lesson in how wildfires often do just the opposite. They burn under conditions when there's nighttime inversions and all the smoke goes right down into the human habitation areas. The Klamath River folks have been experiencing that pretty much all summer.
It's been pretty striking to look at on the Oregon side because you can go days and days without ever realizing there is a fire burning just over the state line. And then, of course, the weather conditions change, the wind moves everything north, and kaboom, the Rogue Valley is filled with smoke.
Exactly, exactly. And they've got 102,000 acres, I think, last time I looked, down there near Happy Camp.
About 111 now, as I heard this morning. Yeah.
111, yeah, yeah. So that's a fire that's going to burn until weather conditions change, and there's just not a whole lot they can do about it. If we had an aggressive program of control burning in that area, for example, there would be not only would there be the opportunity to burn those fuels when the smoke was not going to go into people's lungs, but in many cases you can do a lot more tactical stuff suppressing a fire when you've got burned areas, control burned areas, to help you fight the fire. In other words, prescribed fires set firefighters, suppression people, up to be more successful at putting fires out, stopping their spread.
It sounds like an area where there's been a controlled fire then is almost like a pre-built fire line.
Yeah, that's actually a very good analogy. The whole idea is that to prescribe fire is it's not only restoring a basic ecologic function that's been around for millions of years, but it reduces rate of spread, resistance to control, and severity of fires. Those are the three main parameters that people use to judge how fires are acting on the landscape. And if you can reduce the rate of spread, the speed at which it spreads, because you've denied it fuel, a wildfire is much more manageable. And, well, obviously, by definition, resistance to control means, you know, how many crews, how many airplanes, how much stuff are you going to have to throw at that fire to stop it? And if it's been prescribed burn in that area within even the last 30 years or so, I've been on many fires that would hit an area that had previously been treated, and the behavior of the fire changes dramatically. And then a big part of this is severity. When we get a fire running through an area, a wildfire, if we've had treatment, many of the trees survive the wildfire and are then able to repopulate the area with trees and so forth. And that's a big part of it, is to reduce the severity of wildfires, the amount of stuff that gets killed in the wildfire.
Jim Wells, is the Southern Oregon Prescribed Fire Network a fairly new entity?
Yes, it is. We are about, I'd say, a year in sitting together. However, all the individuals on our in our group have been involved in fire issues, wildland fire issues, prescribed fire issues, firefighting issues for many decades.
Are you a firefighter yourself?
Not myself, no. My experience with fire began with the what's known as the Warner Creek Fire in the Oak Ridge District up near Eugene several decades ago, back in the early 90s, where I was a public participant there in forestry issues and got a quite a quick education and thorough education and deep education in fire ecology. So I consider myself an amateur fire ecologist. If I may, for a second, I actually had not expected to be on the call, but I got a call this morning thinking that maybe Rich had wasn't able to make it or something, and so I. But I do have to go shortly for my livelihood as a pear salesman.
Oh, okay.
If you have, but I, you know, I'd like to whatever questions you might have for me as the chair, including that one you just asked, I'd be happy to handle and then get off the phone because, as you can probably tell already. And the listeners can probably tell Rich is extremely well-versed in this, knows quite a bit about it, and then is a good spokesperson for us.
All right. Tell us then, if you would, just how you focus the efforts of the Southern Oregon Prescribed Fire Network, what your plans are for the future.
Got it. Well, actually, we're going to be having a meeting today that's going to discuss our some of our plans for the future. But so far, our main goal has been and will probably continue to be to educate as many people as we can, particularly local communities, on the use of prescribed fire, the smart use of prescribed fire for a number of different results, beneficial results to humans and to the environment and the forests, and to promote in other ways, whatever we can, the application of that wise use of prescribed fire on the landscape.
Is membership open to anybody in the Southern Oregon Prescribed Fire Network?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, our intention is to be as broad a base a group as possible for collaborative brainstorming and effort. We are strictly nonpartisan, and we feel that this is a community issue, and that we therefore the broadest number of community members from all walks of life and points of view is absolutely essential to its success.
All right, and how should people contact the Southern Oregon Prescribed Fire Network if they want to be part of it?
They can email me or call me as the chair or any one of our members that they might be able to find the information to, and if you'd like me to give you that information, I'll do that.
If you're ready for the onslaught, I'll take it.
Absolutely. So my phone number is 541-968-8035.
Mm-hmm. 8035, got it.
And my email is homegrown53, so that would be, of course, HOMEGROWN, numeral 5, numeral 3, at hotmail.com.
All right. Jim Wells, the chair of the Southern Oregon Prescribed Fire Network, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll stick the rest of the way with Rich Fairbanks. Appreciate
your time.
Absolutely,
and thank you, Rich, for handling this. Carry on.
All right. Take care. Rich, I want to ask you then, you were talking about reducing the severity of fires when we first got into the discussion of things. Let me invite our listeners to join us again, too. 800-838-3760, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. If fire is not part of the natural regime out there and you do get a hot fire burning through, are you killing large trees that otherwise might have lived through a fire?
Wait, what was the first part of that question? I'm sorry.
If a fire does burn very hot, is basically what it gets down to. Does it end, as opposed to having fire be a regular part of the ecosystem, do you end up losing things like trees that would have survived otherwise?
Yeah, the problem with high severity fire, especially in mixed conifer, which is what we mostly live in, just 90% of the people that we're talking about are living in the mixed conifer forest. And those forests are adapted to low and moderate severity fires. They have the trees have thick bark. They have a marvelous wound response in some species, that sort of thing. They can survive fires up to 3-4 foot average flame length. You get above that, especially if you've taken fire out of the mix for many decades, you get these very intense fires that climb up into the crowns of the trees and become crown fires. And they kill pretty much all above-ground vegetation. And so that's not only not natural. I hate to use that term, but not natural. But it's very hard to fight a crown fire. All you can really do is flank it. You know, run up the side until the wind changes or runs out of fuel or something changes. So they're very dangerous to firefighters, these high severity fires, and they kill all the trees. So that's a big part of why we're advocating for prescribed fires. We want to reduce that severity. You can, for example, homeowners, we talk a lot with homeowners, and they're facing the possibility that they might save their house in a wildfire, but have the entire neighborhood just a bunch of black sticks, you know, completely killed all the vegetation. And that's one of the things we're trying to convince people, that if they just do some fuel work around their house, if they do have a fire, not only is their house more likely to survive, but the trees around their house are more likely to survive.
Let's take some calls. We have Paul in Grants Pass on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about prescribed fire with Rich Fairbanks.
Good morning. This is a great program, and I'd just like to share some observations. I really enjoy going out into the Illinois River area, and you can see the areas where the fire-adapted ecology was allowed to exist even in our periods of heavy-duty fire suppression. And those areas have already bounced back from the Biscuit Fire. They're looking pretty good. And you go a little bit further out where the suppression suppression activities were significant, and where the understory fuels built way up, and it's still a desert. It's just incredible. Not only does it kill the trees, but it also kills the mycorrhiza in the soil that allows the trees to flourish. Prescribed burns and fuels reduction, other fuels reduction technologies make great sense to me.
All right. Thanks for that, Paul. Appreciate it. When he talks about the soil getting all cleared out like that, Rich, I've seen fires like the Hull Mountain Fire 20 years ago, where it burned so hot in places that the firefighters are telling me when we came in afterward, the soil was essentially sterilized there.
Oh, absolutely. And we just had a program on that. We had a soil scientist come in and explain the exact parameters of that soil damage that can happen. As the gentleman said, you kill off the fungi, and often you kill off the seed bank that's stored in the soil. The heat kills that stuff. Sometimes you'll even get what's called a hydrophobic layer. It's a long explanation, but basically the raindrops just kind of slide off of the soil surface, and you get a lot more flooding because they've changed the physical structure of the soil. So very hot fires can be very, very difficult to rehab, to bring the forest back. And one of the things that the gentleman alluded to was thinning. And I did want to talk about that a little bit. One of the things that we also advocate for is fire surrogates. In other words, things that imitate the action of these low and moderate severity fires that used to be so frequent in this region. Cutting from below the smaller trees in a stand and either burning or chipping the slash is a very effective fire surrogate, and we recommend it when people are working very close around their houses and stuff, and they don't want to take the risk of doing a burn. You can thin and get very similar results. You concentrate the growth on the few larger trees. You can leave the largest individuals of the most fire-resistant species, and therefore buy yourself a lot of protection when there is a fire. So that's one of the things that we are advocating for is, I'm talking non-commercial thinning, I'm talking little, you know, 4-inch diameter trees, is thinning those out around people's houses and along evacuation routes and other critical areas. So we not only advocate for prescribed fire, but also for fire surrogates.
I'm glad you brought up the concept of non-commercial thinning, because what's often talked about is commercial thinning, isn't it, where a company wants to make some money by selling some of the good-sized trees, so they do take out some of the trees that otherwise would be the kinds of things you're trying to manage for.
Exactly, and some unfortunately, some PR is done around the idea that that's the same thing as what we're advocating for, and it's not. we're really not talking about logging at all. We're talking about little trees, bushes, things like that, removing those when you're in a situation where controlled burning wouldn't be appropriate for one reason or another. And it's just very effective. We've now got 25 years of data that thin from below, they call it, followed by slash treatment. It works. It's saved a lot of houses and probably a few firefighters.
Rich Fairbanks is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, longtime wildland firefighter, member of the Southern Oregon Prescribed Fire Network. Here is Mike in Eagle Point. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, good morning. I believe it's pretty well established that all across the continent, Native Americans used fire as a habitat management tool. And I wonder if your guests could address to what extent that applied to the Rogue Valley or Southern Oregon, and how the land has changed as a result of the displacement of Native peoples. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that, Mike. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Carl Skinner, the researcher at Pacific Southwest Range and Forest Experiment Station, is just finishing up some research on the Ashland watershed and what the fire ecology is there. And what he is finding is that there was a tremendous amount of Indian burning, prescribed burning, in the days before European settlement. And it appears that not only were they burning for things like stimulating the production of certain berries and making hunting easier and more successful, but they were also being very, very aware of the need to reduce fuels, to protect their villages and so forth. So this is a very old idea, and it's been very skillfully done for thousands of years. We're sort of rediscovering that and adding in our ability to have satellites and chainsaws and some modern equipment, but it's the same idea that these folks figured out thousands of years ago.
We have an email here from Bruce in Happy Camp. He says, controlled burns are great. I am amazed at the logging industry and the federal agency's inability to manage forests. They made huge clear cuts, never thinned as they promised. They changed the healthy forest into a fire hazard, and yet they take money away from prescribed fire for firefighting. Poor management, a cut-and-run industry left to military-style firefighting frustrates me to no end. That from Bruce in Happy Camp. Your observations, Rich?
I would say that Bruce has been sitting in that smoke, and he has a right to be annoyed. And there is a lot of unfortunate things happening with our budget right now. Not only have we had for example, the local BLM, they manage 900,000 acres around here, the BLM district around here. Their fuel treatment budgets dropped by 70% over the last decade, and that's, you know, it's just completely unacceptable. Forest Service budget has declined. One of the saddest things, to me anyway, is the FY 2015 president's budget includes a decrease of, I can't do math on the radio, about 20%, from the previous year. If we're not doing research to figure out how to do this right, how to do fire right, then we're sort of dooming future generations to this kind of, you know, heavy smoke events and subdivisions burning up and people having to evacuate and so forth. So the fact that they're not only cutting the budget for, you know, today's problem, but they're preventing maybe the future people from solving these problems. We've had tremendous success with research on how to do this stuff right. We've had a lot of good information come in the last 15 years or so. They've, since the South Canyon disaster, there's been a real commitment to researching this and studying it. And apparently the federal government has kind of lost that commitment. And it's a shame because we do, last year we had an entire crew killed on a fire in Arizona, for example.
Right.
This is not getting any easier. Even with new technology and bigger bombers and all of this stuff, we're still getting way too many people injured and killed. And the answer to it, the key to it, to a large extent, is research. We'll figure some of this stuff out.
Don and Eugene is on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking prescribed fires with Rich Fairbanks.
Hi, Rich. I've been kind of following this because one of my favorite forests was destroyed by a prescribed burn. Which I understand the importance of them, and in fact, was listening to a program about the Indians in the Northeast who used to do this prescribed burns at least twice a year. But I just want to bring an idea up again about having a fleet of tanker drones to really end, you know, to end quickly fires that are that could get out of control and seal the soil, as you say. These drones would, of course, be in GPS controlled, and they'd very accurately deliver the retardant. And
let's get a response because we're short on time. Thanks for the call, Don. Appreciate it, Rich.
Oh, that's my response. I love it. And that's exactly the kind of thing that we really should be looking into. And research is the key. That's a great idea, but obviously we'd have to check it out, see if it really works, put some money into research and development. And unfortunately, that's just not happening under current budget priorities. Control burning and all of the things that need to be figured out about it is just not getting the priority from the Congress and the Senate. It's very unfortunate.
We started talking a few years ago. I know we're down to our last few seconds here, but it seems like we've been talking for years now about, yes, we need to put fire back into the ecosystem. Is it just a budget obstacle? Is it a political obstacle?
To a very large extent, it is a budget-driven problem. We've got zoning and building codes and a lot of other things to work on, but at its core, it is about the budget not being sufficient to do the job.
All right, Rich Fairbanks, thanks so much for joining us. Longtime wildland firefighter, member of the Southern Oregon Prescribed Fire Network. Very much appreciate your time today, and Jim Wells as well.
Thank you.